welcome Hoosier fans to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 210th edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 703rd episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of April 22nd, 2021. I'm your host, the coach, Brian Tonsoni. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Smart takes a shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
This week's banner moment occurred on Monday when Tamar Bates committed to Indiana and Coach Woodson. Tamar is Coach Woodson's first high school commitment and adds a level of talent, top 60 or even higher, depending on the rating service, and he will help us win games. Tamar was committed elsewhere until they had a coaching change, and he decided to look at Coach Woodson in Indiana. For Coach Woodson to earn the trust of Tamar and his family in such a short time is a great sign that Coach Woodson's messaging is able to close the sale on recruits. So much of us spent the day Monday working on lineup possibilities and who's going to play and what the depth chart look. And then all of a sudden Tuesday hit and Miller Kopp, formerly of Northwestern, commits to transfer to Indiana. And just like that, the Indiana roster is at 13 scholarship players. We understand that that roster can always change in today's game and today's atmosphere. However, the 13 young men represent a move to a new type of basketball at Indiana, a roster that brings a lot of off-season excitement. Most of all, it has been great to witness Coach Woodson execute the vision that he and Athletic Director Scott Dolson agreed upon when the coaching hire was made. Now it's time to develop the players, to mesh the coaching staff, and to decide the details of the offense and the defense to get ready for November. November, it's a long way away, but when we get there, I believe it'll be a fun November, and we can't wait. Okay, let me introduce my esteemed co-host for tonight. To my left, he is Mike Woodson of Girls Youth Sports Coaching in Cincinnati, one of the world's most respected bracketologists and a guy who always knows how to have fun talking hoops.
You'll have fun. Fun.
He is the one and only Andy Bottoms. Andy, what's on your mind this week on Indiana basketball?
Yeah, another exciting week for IU between the Bates commitment and Miller Kopp, as you talked about. I know we'll talk about those as we get going on the show. I thought one of the things that stood out to me was, and this certainly made the rounds on Twitter, but when Mike Woodson went back to the Knicks game on Wednesday night, I believe it was, and just kind of watching the players hug him and excited to see him, and Julius Randle signing a jersey for him after the game. I think for a program, and we've talked about this as well, you know, the kids, the players came and said one of the things they really want is relationship, a strong relationship from a coaching perspective. And, you just look at a guy like that who's been able to clearly make an impression on, you know, grown men in the NBA, and you makes you that much more excited to see, you know, what he's going to do with that aspect of what he's doing in Bloomington. You're seeing that already in some of the recruiting and the guys that he's getting able to come in, and the way they seem to respond to his kind of straightforward, no nonsense, tell you stuff you don't want to hear type thing. But you just saw as guy after guy went through the line, you know, giving him a hug and talking to him. Just the respect that they had for him. And I think that's really exciting. And I think speaks so much to his character and just being the kind of guy that we're excited to have lead the program. So that to me, as much as the final two commitments, as you mentioned, really spoke volumes this week about Woodson and what he's trying to build here.
I don't think those guys had a choice to hug or not. He was just going to grab him and, you know, show his love. That was cool part to me, that he was just grabbing their necks and their head and pulling them in. I enjoyed that too. Now, to my right, ladies and gentlemen, he's back, making his triumphant return after a long absence that included LASIK surgery. He's a senior writer at the Big Lead and San Diego's most famous Hoosier.
Analyzing players, finding every wrinkle. He hasn't ever hosted, never lifted a finger. He's got all the
Well, let me quickly add just one thing about this.
Dude just interrupted his own jingle.
He is Ryan Phillips. Ryan, any pent-up rants after your time away?
I think it's just a look. Of course, I haven't been on for a couple weeks now. I had surgery last Wednesday and doing great. Thank you for those of you who reached out wondering. It was just eye surgery and went very easily. Took 15 minutes. Recommend it to anybody. But I think that the big takeaway over the last few weeks has been the amount of talent that has been added to the program. Obviously, a lot of us were upset when Armon Franklin transferred away and thought, wow, it's a big loss for Indiana, especially offensively. You've got some guys who can play defense on the perimeter and, all that stuff. But you were missing that sort of dog offensively, that guy you could rely on the perimeter. And they went out and got, Xavier Johnson is in now. And then this week you add, Scoop Bates and you add Miller Kopp, guys who add some punch offensively. And Miller Kopp is basically the exact guy Indiana's been missing for the last few years, just a guy who can sit on the perimeter and shoot. Now, he can do more than that, but he's a guy who, if you want to reduce his role to just being a perimeter shooter, it changes your offense because of how much you can spread the floor with him. And you cannot leave that guy alone. And he does some other things. He's an effort guy and all that. And so I think that just the level of talent that has been added, particularly on the offensive end, has been really encouraging. And Indiana in the roster it brings back now, it's pretty darn good if it's coached up right. And there's a lot of talent there. And you've got some young talent. You've got some older guys that have some experience. You have a really good mix. You're not expecting a Big Ten championship in Mike Woodson's first year. This is going to be a process, but at the same time, you've got a lot of talent to jump to get going from the jump. Whereas a couple weeks ago, we were thinking, hey, there might be a mass exodus of players, which is understandable when there's a coaching change. And then Mike Woodson's got to, bring in his guys, and it takes a process of a few years. We knew the transfer portal would help Indiana. It could also hurt Indiana in the long run. I think the roster is in a better place now than it was at the end of the season, if you had kept everybody, even with the loss of Armon Franklin. I just think that this is a better roster. They may not be done yet. We don't know if there's going to be any more people leaving, people coming in. We don't know. But as I sit right here, you have to be happy with how this offseason has played out for Indiana so far. And, now it's up to the coaches to mold these guys how they want them and take them to the next level.
Ryan, I think key takeaway from what you said is there are guys who can score, and then there are guys who have scorer's mentality. We've added quite a few guys, some freshmen, some transfers that look like they have a little bit of that attitude where give me the ball is going to go in the basket. And that's something that Indiana, besides in the post, has not had for a while, and in this amount. So the talent level has really, really picked up. So here's what we're going to cover this week. We'll talk about some Hoosier headlines. It was another packed week of IU news. Our main topic in segment two will be a Tamar Bates scouting report, where Andy and I pepper Ryan with some questions about the newest high school recruit to commit to Indiana, and then we'll end by answering your questions. And there are some really solid questions from the community this week. Just really appreciate that participation. All of that is coming up on Assembly Call Radio. But before we jump into the Hoosier headlines, I want to share a few quick words about Playbook products. If you haven't checked your calendar recently, 2021 is moving fast, which means Mother's Day is less than a month away and Father's Day is 2 months away. Well, if you need a thoughtful, unique gift for the sports fan in your life, you really should pick out something from Playbook Products. They offer an incredible selection of high-quality coasters and coffee mugs that feature diagrams of famous plays. For IU, it's the Watch Shot and Key Smart Shot and much more. For the Cubs, it's moments from Game 7 of the World Series. For the Pacers, it's moments like Reggie Miller's 8 points in 9 seconds and silencing Spike Lee. They even have one for the Colts that commemorates the infamous worst play ever, Chuck Pagano's ludicrous trick play attempt against the Patriots. And as you can see, they have a sense of humor and offer unique gifts that the sports fan in your life will appreciate. So go to assemblycall.com/PP, that's assemblycall.com/PP, and start browsing. You'll definitely find something for yourself or that sports fan in your life. And here's a bonus. When you use that URL, assemblycall.com/PP, they know that we sent you, so we get a 15% commission on your entire order. Go to assemblycall.com/PP and pick out your coasters and mugs today. That's assemblycall.com/PP. So here we go. Let's hit some Hoosier headlines. We're obviously going to talk a lot about Tamar Bates' commitment and get Ryan's scouting report in segment two. Miller Kopp from Northwestern commits and adds some shooting to the Hoosiers. Jared did a really nice job interviewing Kenya Hunter, and we appreciate Indiana allowing Coach Hunter to come on our show. That was really good. Coach Woodson, Andy, you mentioned the video that was going around from the New York Knicks, and there was a couple of them. One, Julius Randle signed a jersey after the game, but the before the game where the players came up and hugged Coach Woodson, it was really good. Grace Berger from the women's team named one of the 13 finalists for the 2021 USA Women's AmeriCup team. Congratulations to Grace. And then Alabama makes a graphic on Twitter promoting being a number one seed from Joe Lunardi. I think
off-season champs, baby, off-season champs.
Andy, we need to get in the game and get a little, you know, compensation for off-season bracketology if Alabama's gonna be doing that. So those are some of our Hoosier headlines. Andy, anything there in particular grabs your attention?
I mean, not the bracketology one, although kudos to anybody who's doing it at this point with as much roster movement as there's been.
Can you hang a banner for that? You know, even number one seed in a first bracket for 2020.
Who knows? But yeah, I definitely too much roster movement for me to track to even hazard a guess at who would be where at this point. But yeah, congrats to them. You know, the Grace Berger thing I think is great. I believe they're taking 12 on the roster for the team. So she's one of, you know, 13 people for 12 spots. For those who have watched her, probably not all that surprising, but some really big names on there as well that I watched her in the NCAA tournament. So hopefully she makes the cut. It'd be a great honor and a well-deserved one for her. You know, the Miller Kopp thing, because I know he's not the scouting report that we're doing tonight, I guess I'll linger on that one for a minute. Certainly a guy who played some solid games against IU, but even above and beyond that, just as you looked at his skill set when he first came in the portal and the notion that he might be an option for IU does really seem to fit a need. Can guard some different positions given his size. But really the closest thing to a true stretch four that IU has had in I'm not really sure how long, quite frankly. And so I think that part's exciting. I think he's a guy who can really space the floor, struggled with the shot at times last season, as you guys talked about on the show earlier this week when following his commitment. But a guy that really has shot it well at times, it feels like that's the aberration as opposed to the to what he really is. So I think that's going to really pay some dividends. I don't know whether he works his way into the starting lineup, but being able to bring a guy off the bench that's got some versatility, that knows the league, is going to be really important and that can really, really space the floor and be the beneficiary. You know, he's a guy who doesn't do a great job of being able to create his own shot, but there's guys on this team now who can create shots for him. And if he can be able to sit there and knock him down, I think that becomes a really important pickup and an exciting one that I know we'll talk about more as we go. But that one stood out to me just because he kind of brings a combination of skills that other guys on the roster don't really have all in the same package.
Yeah, sorry, Coach, but I just wanted to say before we moved on him, you know, another thing he does really well, makes his free throws, which is something that will be music to Hoosier fans' ears. I mean, 89.6% in 2020, 84.8% last year. Now, I think that last year also, some of the numbers, and I've been talking to some college basketball guys, they think the numbers are going to be weird from last year. And not that, you know, there's no value in them, but there is going to be, it's going to be interesting to see if numbers carry over from the shortened COVID season. Because there was less of an offseason program, guys got out of whack, guys were training on their own, you know, and so we're going to see aberrations in numbers. The question is, you know, does that apply to Miller Kopp? I don't know. But a guy who had been a very consistent and improving shooter to kind of drop off a little bit might have had something to do with the weirdness of the season and also that he played most of his season against the Big Ten as opposed to getting maybe to rack up some numbers in non-conference games. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how he transitions. I think that giving him the freedom to not have to be one of the top two scorers on his team may change what he does. Somebody asked me for a comparison on him. I mean, what you're expecting from him as a transfer is basically to be a bigger version of what Nicholas Eisloff did, which was be the perimeter guy. You don't need to drive and score. You can post up a little bit maybe because he's 6'7" in a smaller lineup. Maybe you get some isolation. But in general, you want him to be a shooter. I mean, that is what you're bringing him in for. He's aggressive. He dives on the floor. He does all those hustle things that can really pump things up. People talk about him being a leader and a really smart basketball player. But in the end, if you're boiling this down to one skill, you're bringing this guy in to shoot in a 4-out-1-in system. That's what you're bringing him in for. And you look at his shot and you look at the shot form and you say, that's better than the guy who shot 33% in 2020, 2021. You just look at the shot form and you know he's better than that. And the other thing is he won't have a top defender on him with the other guys that can surround him on the floor. So he's going to get open and he's going to have better chances to get shots, I think, at Indiana.
Ryan, that's exactly what I was going to say. You know, he spent 2 years really shocking people with his ability to score, so he becomes top scouting report on that Northwestern team, and that's not taken away. There are a couple other nice players, but you're always going to be the guy that they want to take away first, and now you come to where there's a Trace Jackson Davis in the post, and you got some other players around. Then teams, are they going to put, you know, they got to stop TJD first, which puts other defensive emphasis elsewhere. And you're
well, as you know, Coach, guys who can shoot on the perimeter are also going to make TJD's life a lot easier on the inside. You know,
absolutely.
All of that.
Because it's just about spacing. And we've now have, meaning Indiana, that spacing. And Miller Kopp brings that spacing. I'd like to bring it out. I'm going to throw it to you, Ryan, for your thoughts. But Kenya Hunter's interview with Jared, one, I know Jared has been working on trying to get some of the personnel in from Indiana. So kudos out to Jared for doing that. And I know he's working on some other things and has some interesting things in our community. If you're interested, bringing in some former players. So we're really moving in that direction. So kudos to Jared for doing that. But Coach Hunter's had a couple of media availabilities, one with us, one overall. And boy, I really like, he keeps saying pace or wants to play a little faster. I think those are some really good things to hear as far as the change of what's going on. I thought he had a pretty good analysis of what happened last year and how it snowballed towards the end. And you kind of read between the lines that, you know, a Coach Woodson personality with his ability to be real and honest, but yet be that guy who's going to grab you and give you a hug, might have been what was needed in a COVID year when everything was kind of crazy and the pressure was immense. So just I really enjoyed Jared's interview quite a bit, getting to know a little bit more about the way Coach Hunter sees things. Ryan, which one of those headlines, or do you want to comment on that? Go ahead. Yeah.
You know, I think it was great that Coach Hunter came on. I think that, you know, I think that that's our first active assistant coach or coaching interview ever in 10 years of this, more than 10 years of this show almost now. We've done 10 seasons. And I thought his comments about the team currently were interesting. I thought his comments about Coach Woodson were interesting. And I thought, again, wanting to play with pace, wanting to essentially read between the lines. They want to play modern basketball, which is something we didn't see over the last four years. For right or wrong, whatever the system Archie Miller brought in didn't work. And I think, yeah, it's high time within the bounds of the rest of college basketball and start shooting threes and start moving the ball up the court and play with some pace. Certain teams can get away with not doing that, but they have to run that system absolutely perfectly. As we've seen it, a place like Virginia, a team that didn't shoot a ton of threes this year was Gonzaga, and they were amazing, but they also had incredible levels of talent and ran their system so perfectly. They didn't need to shoot as many threes as everybody else. So I think that those things can work, but you've got to be so perfect. It's a high wire act. And as you saw, you know, when Gonzaga faced some really tough teams in the Final Four, their system got a little out of whack and they needed to hit threes and it just wasn't there the way it could have been. And so again, I think that hitting threes, playing with some pace, playing modern basketball is a huge part of what Indiana's transformation under Mike Woodson has to be to move into that world. Now, at the same time, when you're doing that, you got to play defense, which was missing from Tom Crean's era, where they did play modern up-tempo offense and they didn't guard anybody. And so it's, you've got to do it both ways. But I feel like, you know, listening to Kenya, it just seems like that's what they want to do is get up tempo, get up the floor and play a spread out, faster version of college basketball, which I think we all agree is needed.
Absolutely. Okay, coming up on Assembly Call Radio, it's scouting report time. We welcome Ryan back. And he has a few of them to get caught up on. So we're going to start with the highest rated recruit to pick IU since Romeo Langford. We'll talk to Mar Bates next. Stick with us on the Assembly Call.
Now streaming on PBS, Philly DA, a gripping new documentary series from Independent Lens. Will reformer Larry Krasner's agenda survive clashes with police and the courts? Philly DA on PBS. Stream it now on the PBS Video app.
Sticky notes, email alerts, a string around your finger. They're just not big enough. So here's a big reminder from the California Lottery. The Mega Millions jackpot is over 250 million. Whew. Play now. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 years or older to purchase player five.
This is Ethan Happ, and I never listen to the Assembly Call, especially the episodes that Ryan is on.
Welcome back, everyone, except Ethan Happ, to the Assembly Call. If you're not subscribed to our YouTube channel yet, make sure you go do that. Just go to youtube.com/assemblycall. You'll get alerts when we go live, immediate access to replays and all of the between segment yoga banter that you could ever want, and after show banter. It doesn't always make it into the podcast. Plus, you can hang out with the chat mob during our live shows. There are over 3,500 IU fans already subscribed, and you should be too. Go to youtube.com/assemblycall. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni, here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms, and it's now time to get the scouting report on Tamar Bates, the newest recruit to sign with Indiana. Currently number 23 at ESPN, number 44 in the 247 composite ranking, and number 60 in 247, but those rankings are about to change. And Andy, you and I are going to fire away some questions about Tamar. I'll take the first one. Let's just go right to his ability to score. How is Tamar going to score when we see him suit up for the Hoosiers next season?
Yeah, so for everyone who doesn't know, he's 6'4", listed at 6'4", 175 from out of IMG Academy. Again, just a factory for great athletics down there. And so he's played some really good competition. So when you look at his video, you know that he's playing against good players. You know, when you look at film of him, he's not playing against guys in the middle of nowhere. He's playing against good competition. And he's a lefty shooter, and he's going to score in a variety of ways, Coach. And just looking at the way he played, and again, we don't know. You don't know if this is going to be as a freshman. This is what he can do. It's going to be. This is what he projects as doing. And he's a guy who scores at all three levels. He's a shooter from the perimeter. He can score on the mid range, and then the dude loves to get to the rim. I mean, he is very aggressive. And Coach, I know you watched some videos.
Yeah.
You can tell when a guy wants to be aggressive, and your coaching experience, you know, when guys are no, I'm going to score. And he's got that attitude and that mentality, something that IU has been missing for a few years. And I like his shot form. He does. I don't want to overstate it, but it's sort of a modified lander sometimes, where he kind of has that front leg a little more forward than it should be. So not as balanced, but It's not as dramatic as Christian Lander. And so I actually like his shot form. I think he needs to straighten it out a little bit and square those shoulders. But he doesn't do it every time. It's sometimes he'll sort of jab step and then shoot from there. And his front foot, when you jab step, is ahead of the other. So he kind of overcorrects there. I think that that's, again, something they'll work on with him. And you can shoot like that a little bit, but it can't be exaggerated. And so that tells me he's a young guy who sometimes it gets out of whack and gets a little exaggerated, and he leans on his dominant side, which a lot of guys do. The ball sometimes when he shoots, it sinks into his palm. And as anybody who knows about shooting knows, you got to have the ball on your fingertips. So sometimes when it rolls to his palm, I've actually seen him make shots when it rolls onto his palm, just because his release is actually really good and he gets great rotation on the ball. But when that ball sinks to your palm, you're going to line drive it because you're not getting the lift off your fingertips that you need when you shoot. So it's something to watch with him. If he's starting to line drive it, it's likely the ball is sinking down lower on his hand. He's just got to be cognizant of keeping that towards the end of his fingers. But again, reps work that out and being conscious of it. No, off the fingertips, off the fingertips, off the fingertips gets you to start doing it. Again, I was really impressed with his ability to score everywhere on offense, and not only just from the three-point line, being able to drive it, being able to handle with both hands and find ways to get to the rim, finish in traffic, and his ability to pull up if he wants to take a mid-range jumper, which we know is inefficient, but dang, it's pretty sometimes, isn't it, guys? He's definitely a scorer more than a passer. He's not going to be a point guard. He is going to be a combo guard scorer kind of guy. He might be able to bring the ball up in a couple years. He's not a super accomplished ball handler right now. Driving in traffic when he's trying to score, I like the way he handles the ball, sort of on the perimeter, doesn't really get aggressive with it. But no, this is a guy who's coming in to be a shooting guard. He is not coming in to run your point, run your program. Maybe if he stays around a couple years, he works on doing that. But I think that's something he needs to work on. I also offensively liked his vision as a passer. He's not super aggressive with his passes. He's not throwing backdoor cuts. He's not throwing lobs for other guys. But he does have some pretty good court vision already that'll need to be developed even further against Big Ten defenses.
So, Ryan, as you think about what he does well and what he needs to improve on, I guess what's the thing that you think translates the best in year one at IU and maybe something that he'll really need to work on over his time, over the summer, whatever you want to say?
Well, the first thing he does really well is just his aggressiveness. He's going to go try and score, and he'll probably get fouled on the way. You know, I mean, more often than not, you know, there'll be some contact or something. One of the problems, and I get why Indiana went after him. One of the problems Indiana had for a long time was guys kind of looking for somebody else to go do something. And if not, we'll just defer to Trace Jackson Davis and make him shoot the ball in traffic. You know, and so I think that he's a guy who he gets the ball. He is exceptionally confident when he has the ball in his hands. And it like exceptionally confident. You can just see it on video. When he gets the ball, he's not rushing. He's not like, oh, I've got to do something with it. He catches it, surveys the floor, kind of smoothly dribbles, and then boom, takes off, shoots, passes the ball, looks for openings. I mean, he is supremely confident on the court. I think that's the thing I like most about him, is just his confidence as a basketball player. The thing I think he needs to work on is he's got to bulk up defensively. He's not a great on-ball defender. Off ball, he'll jump into passing lanes. He'll be aggressive. He'll go get that. I think he's got the right defensive instincts. I just think he's kind of thin right now, and he's got really good length. He's got long arms. I think he can be a good defender, but I think right now it's kind of he got really into that trying to find a steal as opposed to just keeping his man in front of him. And I think that's sort of his next level of development as a defender, is just to sort of, hey, keep your guy in front of you. Don't let him body you. Stay low, kind of mirror his movements, as opposed to being too aggressive and getting, you know, on a guy. We saw that with Armand Franklin as a freshman. Used a lot of hands defensively, really wanted to make a play defensively, as opposed to just let the guy make a mistake or make him, you know, stay in front of him so he has to get rid of the ball. He has to move it to somewhere else because he can't just drive by you. So that's what I think my biggest point of development for him is going to be, is just on the ball defending. Can he keep his man in front of him?
Your thoughts on his athletic ability coming in and how it plays at the college level. I know there's just some tape out there. I kind of saw some, you mentioned explosiveness a couple times in a variety of ways, but I think he looks like he runs the floor rather well on both sides in transition defense and in transition offense. Your thoughts on that athletic ability and how that will play in the Big Ten?
He'll get up and down the floor for sure. His athleticism, I think there's another level to be unlocked in college, as we were talking about during the break. I think there is another level. He's not like, you know, Troy Williams. He's not playing. He's not living above the rim, but he plays above the rim. You know, you could tell his high school team in Kansas, if you look at some older plays, ran a play against a zone where he was on the left side. They passed it back and forth, passed it back and forth, drew the defense up, and then he would go back door for a lob. And you could see it several times on his film. They got that zone to step up a little bit, and he would sneak in behind. He can play above the rim. He doesn't live there, though. You know, he's a guy who's not going to dunk it every time he's in the lane. He's going to finish with layups. And again, being 6'4", you don't expect him to, you know, he's not Oladipo, where he's going to be at that next level. But I do think there's another level of athleticism to unlock. But on that same token, Coach, the thing I know you're going to love, and it goes along, you know, when a guy knows how good he is and knows how athletic he is and knows what he can do, the thing you're going to love is he's just a dude. He is a dog. He plays hard.
Potential closer? Potential closer at some point in his career?
Absolutely. And the guy, I did mark it down. Well, he's not Victor, you know, athletically. What I would say about him is the guy he reminded me of, based on his supreme confidence, the way he carries himself, the aggressiveness of willing to just, no, I'm taking the ball, I'm going to go score. He reminded me of the attitude version. He reminded me of Victor Oladipo. That was that confidence, that swagger, that just, I'm going to go do this and you can't stop me. And he's a vocal guy. He'll lay it up and get fouled and, you know, scream and pump his chest and get excited. And those, again, things we haven't seen at Indiana in a while. You'd see Trace do that every once in a while. Sometimes it felt like he was forced to try and pump his teammates up. But I mean, he's a guy who wants to be vocal, who wants to be sort of a leader type, where he is getting things done and he's letting you know about it. And he's trying to bring the rest of his team along with him. And I think that was the thing that stood out the most to me on tape, was his confidence and the way he carries himself. Because guess what? If you're confident in your ability, you're going to play better. Yep. And it's one thing we've always wanted from a guy like Rob Phinisee. When he looks confident, he plays much better than he does when he's questioning himself. Scoop Bates does not question himself. He knows how good he is, and he knows how good he can be. And I think he knows that if he thinks he's good, he's going to be better. And so yeah. I think that was my favorite part of watching his film. And I think that's going to translate. Now, again, you become a freshman in the Big Ten, you're bottom of the totem pole. You got to keep that attitude, because right. if you don't, your play is going to drop. And so that was the thing I liked most about him, is just that confidence and that swagger.
It's an edge, playing with an edge, as opposed to a yes. pop in the collar type, look at me, I'm out here. It's an edge for himself and his teammates.
Yeah, he's. I think we haven't had edge players, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was the IMG video that was out where he, you know, was talking about playing against guys who had all these more scholarship offers than he did and stuff like that. Yeah, he definitely – you know, the chip on your shoulder guy and all those kinds of things. So I guess, where do you — hard question to answer, because we don't know how any of these pieces are really going to fit together, but where do you kind of see him settling into the IU rotation and his in the early part of the season for sure? I think he's a guy who's grown a lot over the last year or so, so could continue to do that. But like, to start the season, where do you see him slotting in? Who does he complement well on the team? Just those kinds of things from a lineup perspective.
Yeah, and this is a tough — you're right, it's a tough question to answer. I think he's definitely going to be in the rotation as a freshman. I don't see a way you keep this kid off the floor. The question is, you know, where? And I would likely see him — remember, he's coming in later. These guys are already working with the coaches and everything, so he's going to be behind the eight ball a little bit. I would say he'll probably start off on that second unit somewhere. We'll see about his development over the summer. We'll see about, you know, where he, you know, where it goes with him, how quickly he picks up the system, all of that, you know, of course, are factors we can't know. But I think he's on the second unit, because I think you need that guy with that personality and that attitude. And also, again, it's going to depend on how the roster works itself out. If this is the final version — if it is, assuming it is — I think he's got to be on that second unit. I would love to see he and Lander as the guards, you know, on the second unit, playing a decent amount. I don't want him to play 10 minutes a game. I'm talking playing significant minutes together, because I think they'd work well together. I think they'd balance each other. And then maybe you get — I don't know if Parker Stewart's going to start or not, but maybe you get a shooter on the perimeter with them and allow that to spread the floor, give them some driving lanes, gives them some ability, some room to work. But I do think he's going to play. And I think that the goal would be probably year two starter, almost certainly, just based on his trajectory. And as you said, like, you know, his attitude is of, oh, I'm coming to get better. I'm not a complete player. I'm coming to get better. And he's already really good.
I like everything about that.
Man, it is so good to have Coach Woodson back here, you know, visiting tonight. He was listening in. He wanted to know what a, you know, Ryan Phillips scouting report was, and it's just right on par with why he went after Tamar. So good stuff, Ryan.
Coach Woodson probably wants a player comp, if I was to guess. You know,
yeah. But we might get that in
not
the third,
getting one tonight
in the third segment, where we do some subscriber shout outs and answer your questions. So stick around with us here on the Assembly Call.
Sticky notes, email alerts, a string around your finger. They're just not big enough. So here's a big reminder from the California Lottery. The Mega Millions jackpot is over 250 million. Whew. Play now. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 years or older to purchase player five. Sticky notes, email alerts, a string around your finger. They're just not big enough. So here's a big reminder from the California Lottery. The Mega Millions jackpot is over 250 million. Whew. Play now. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 years or older to purchase player five.
Oh. This is Tim Priller, and I never miss an episode of The Assembly Call.
Welcome back. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni, here with Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips. Remember, you need to be subscribed to our email newsletter. We send out a weekly IU news roundup, even during the offseason, and much more. Just text IU to 66866 or go to assemblycall.com. That's IU to 66866 or go to assemblycall.com. And speaking of the email list, we have an ambassador program that rewards subscribers for recommending the email list to other fans. If you get someone to subscribe, you get a shout-out on the show. Let's do two more shout-outs now for those subscribers. And the first one, subscriber shout-out, is from a lady who is very active inside our private discussion community and even has hopped on and co-hosted a few episodes of the show. It's Kathy Amos, who lives in Des Moines, Iowa. Her favorite Hoosier of all time is Steve Alford. Her assembly call leader is me, the coach, about whom she says, I think he's my long-lost brother or spirit animal. You pick. Maybe just crazy uncle, Kathy, would probably be better. And she wants to give a special acknowledge to her Iowa husband for putting up with all her crap, being an IU. Kathy, you're the best. We appreciate you. Thanks for being such a wonderful supporter of the show. Our second subscriber shout-out is Cody Voiles, who lives in Washington, D.C. Favorite Hoosier is Tom Coverdale. Cody says, seeing him put that 2002 team on his back as a young boy resonated with me and further solidified why I love IU basketball. Sure, he wasn't the greatest player stat-wise while at IU, but he's often overlooked. And IU went on over a decade before we saw that type of guard play again with Jordan Halls. Plus, I have a fun story about how I ran into him at Knicks during the epic 2012-13 season and approached him and chatted for a bit. He thanked me for coming to chat and said I was the only one who had recognized him all night. That bummed me out. We took a shot to boost the mood. And he didn't take the who is your assembly call leader question seriously because he answered Jay Horry. And that's just a mediocre response there from Cody. We do appreciate your support, Cody, for spreading the word about the email newsletter. We appreciate it for everyone who is part of the email list and part of our subscriber. We'll shout out some more next week. And now it's time for our mailbag. All questions were submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community at assemblycall.com/community. And our first question is from Kathy. And just a real quick, we'll combine her two. She said, does Miller Kupp resemble Mike Roberts? And I guess we could see that a little bit. And then after watching, I put a short video out on the four out, one in motion offense. What player are you most concerned with on the current roster that won't fit in to the system or needs the biggest improvement to find a spot in the four out, one in kind of offense that has been hinted? Andy, you want to take that first, and Ryan, you follow up on that. Which player needs to make the most improvements in order to fit in to that four out, one in offense kind of as we see it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to say Trey Galloway just because of the shooting component of it. I think he can't drive and be able to create things for others. But if you're really trying to space the floor and do that, given how poorly he shot from three last year, albeit in relatively limited attempts, that feels like the guy in the skill that probably needs to improve the most for that. So that was the one that stood out to me, although I will be honest and say I have not had a chance to watch your coach's corner on that yet. But have it in my inbox still to go and take a look. But yeah, Trey would be the guy for me.
Yeah, I would agree with Trey Galloway. Just to give another answer, I'll say Race Thompson. I think he needs to be able to hit a jumper.
That was the other one I thought of too.
Yeah, if you're facing a big front line and you got to have both he and Trace out there, you know, I think that Race can handle the ball on the perimeter a little bit, and I think that he can do some things on the perimeter. And even we saw him kind of drive in and shoot some floaters this year. He's got to expand his game though, and he's got to be able to hit a jumper if you're really going to fit in alongside Trace against those big front lines in the Big Ten.
I'm just going to go to that stretch four position totally. You know, Race can guard, and he's one of our best hustle players and a guy you want out there, but he's got to be a threat from three in a pick and pop situation. And then if you put Hunter and Kupp there, then can they guard bigs and block out and guard down low if they're power forward with some of the bigger schools? So it's going to be interesting to see what combinations of you know, people get into that stretch four and how much of a threat that is, because you really need it. As we've seen, if you don't have four other threats on the outside, that lane really becomes you know, tough to navigate. Bob Thompson, and I take it to Bob Thompson, our musical director here for the Assembly Call, asked this: 3 years from now, what do you think we will identify as? What will we hang our hat on as a program? Defense, high tempo offense, or banners? Ryan, we'll send that one to you first.
I think it's going to be an efficient offense. I don't know about high tempo. You know, Mike Woodson is, you know, high tempo in relation to wherever. If we're top 100, that's a massive improvement, you know, or top 150, it's a massive improvement. But in the NBA, his offenses weren't super high tempo, but they were efficient. They were very efficient. They didn't take bad shots, didn't turn the ball over, didn't do things like that. I think we'll be more high tempo than we are, but I'm not looking to, you know, be, they're not going to be, I don't think they're going to be Alabama, you know, just running constantly and throwing lobs and all that. I don't think that's what we're going to be, but I would say an efficient offense is what we're going to hang our hat on. I think they'll play defense too, but I think that will be the thing that stands out.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I know Woodson's talked about, you know, the importance of defense and the way that he was guarding ball screens in the NBA and some of those kinds of things. I think they're going to be good defensively, but I think I tend to side with Ryan in that. And if we're talking off the court stuff, I mean, I hope that it's kind of the family atmosphere that he's trying to build. Talking
off the court, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Non basketball stuff. I think that's really what has come through pretty clear. And that means a lot less if you're not winning a bunch of games when the time rolls around. So now we're at the time of year when that means a whole lot. But I do think just the atmosphere he's building and the pride in the program is something they'll be able to hang their hat on. At least I hope so.
For me, Bob, it's a combination of all of that, where that vision that Scott Dolson talked about in order to bring Mike Woodson in, and that Mike Woodson is now executing very well, that is what people are talking about. And the IU back towards the Blue Blood program, I don't think you need banners to that. You just need consistent deep runs and consistent competition and high-level Big Ten results to do that. That would be my hope. Next question, David, do you guys anticipate any more transfers out with the influx of talent coming in this year? Andy, you want to take a shot at that one real quick?
I guess I wouldn't be stunned, as the cupboard is loading up a little bit, that you may have some of that. But I don't know that there's anything that we've heard that might be imminent or anything like that. But I do think you could see situations where – you know, you're looking 1 through 13, and as you're bringing in different guys, there are players you might be able to tell yourself have a tougher road to playing time if they want it. But I also think there's competitive guys out here, and they're going to be given the chance to earn those minutes. So I wouldn't be stunned, but I don't know that anything is going to happen too soon. But you could certainly tell yourself a story. I mean, the same way we talked about it a little bit with Joey Brunk, whether it's the style of the offense, the other guys at the position, things like that. You, if you wanted to craft the story for a couple guys, I think you probably could.
I'm going to go next. Go ahead.
I agree. I just agree with everything that Andy said. Oh, that was painful to say.
I know. It's not easy.
No.
What do you guys see as the floor and the ceiling for this team this year? And who do you think will have the key contributions to reaching that ceiling? Ryan, we'll go with you first.
Ceiling is probably top four in the Big Ten, you know, competing in that top group. I don't think you can say Big Ten champion because we just haven't seen them on the floor yet. But I think what we expect, top four in the Big Ten, easily making the NCAA tournament. I mean, that there's enough talent to do that. The question is the transition to the new system, all that. Floor is probably on the bubble, I think. I don't think it'll be any lower than that, but firmly on the bubble, maybe eking your way in. And that's just if things don't go well, you know, with the transition to the new, like, everybody doesn't fit. But I think that obviously Trace Jackson Davis is going to be a huge part of anything that happens with Indiana this year. I think that a guy like Miller Kopp will have a big impact as well. And the development of Christian Lander is going to be important. You know, where does he slot into the lineup? You know, with Xavier Johnson in, does he start? Is he on that first unit, or is he on the second unit? Where does that go? So there's a lot of questions to answer with this lineup. Based on pure talent and the guys they've got running the program, and I'm including Thad Matta in there, you got to think this team is going to be pretty darn good.
Andy?
Yeah, I think I would agree on the ceiling of top four in the league. That's a little bit, you know, a lot of this is hard to assess without knowing what the rosters are really going to look like and some of the scheduling and all that. But I think that's fair if you look at it that way. There's been a lot of talent leaving the conference for sure, and you know, some talent coming in, a lot to IU's roster. So yeah, on the low end, yeah, I mean you feel like maybe you're. I don't think things would get to where they were last year. So maybe the bubble is the right way to look at that. In terms of players, Lander, I think, is the one that comes to mind just because the recruiting pedigree would suggest there's a lot of room for growth there. So he probably fits that bill. Although I would say Parker Stewart would be another one that I think will speak to that a little bit. He's a guy that's, you know, again, if he shoots the ball as well as they're talking about, with, you know, thinking back to the Kenya Hunter media availability coming in saying, hey, he hit, you know, 20 or 21 threes or whatever it was, you know, if he's really able to step in and be a reliable shooter and scorer from the guard position, I think that does so much for the overall guard depth of the team. And, you know, would provide, you know, just from an experience standpoint, you know, him being around a couple of different programs and things like that. So I'll throw him in that mix as well from a player who may go a long way toward dictating what that will be.
So for me, I think a good acceptable season is the top seven in the Big Ten at any place, and Indiana could compete for any spot in that top seven and an NCAA tournament berth. We would like to see it in the top four. We'd like to see, you know, a top five, six seed maybe in the NCAA tournament get back there. I think we're headed in that direction. The question is it next year or is it the year after, or at what point in this transition do we get there? And the worst case scenario is you play well enough to just be left out, depending on who you play in the in the non-conference, and you know, luck has a little bit to do with it. You know, the ball bounces a couple ways. I think that's the possible floor. Is I think obviously things are going to be better. There's no doubt about it being better. But when you get, you know, and Andy can attest to this, and Ryan, you followed a lot too, that making a tournament is a pretty good deal, and it can't be a given every year. You got to go out and earn it. And there's still some questions of on the floor stuff that have to be figured out with a new coach and new players in order to be that comfortable. I would be shocked if we weren't in the tournament, and maybe probably just disappointed. But I'm not looking at, you know, top four seed type of team.
One thing, I just want to beat Purdue once. Just beat Purdue once. For the love of God, beat Purdue once. That's what I want next year. Once. Because, you know what, if you're beating Purdue next year, who
it's pretty good.
Pains me to say it. They're going to be pretty good. If you're beating Purdue, you're having a pretty good season, I think.
Eric asks, we are now in a good spot, I think, with quite a bit of depth at certain positions. How do you see this being managed to ensure we have good game plan but also maintain a healthy team dynamic? Andy, you know, are there enough basketballs for the 13 scholarships to go around, in essence, is the question.
I do think that's going to be a challenge at this point, given who they brought in. But I also feel like everything you hear about Woodson and the conversations he has, I don't know that he's, you know, guaranteeing people anything and not promising things that he's not going to be able to give in terms of just giving them a chance to compete for minutes and things like that. I am a little bit curious. You know, the NBA has so much of the, you know, kind of a set rotation at times of guys and groups of guys that are playing together. In a shorter game and, you know, different timing in terms of when, you know, TV timeouts come and things like that, I don't really know how transferable something like that would be to the college game, but I am a little bit intrigued as he comes back, whether that's something he would consider or experiment with or something like that, where you get guys that are used to playing together and be able to create some benefits there. I'm just not sure that the, you know, 20 minute half is very conducive to that, but a little bit intrigued at least to see if that might be a way that you could do it and manage some of that. But I do think he's going to have his hands full a bit with that, assuming everybody sticks around, you know, to kind of circle back to the other question about potential transfers and things like that. But that's a good problem to have, I suppose, comparative to, you know, to previous seasons. So
Ryan, thoughts on.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And Mike Woodson's been on the planet for what, 63 years. He's going to use all the wisdom he's gathered in that time to figure out the calculus on keeping this roster together and outfitting it properly and rotating guys properly and figure out who should be playing and who shouldn't be, all that. That's tough. That's really tough. And that's one of the hardest jobs a coach has is, you know, I know he didn't recruit all these guys, but let's just put it, you know, he kept them. So recruiting guys and then not playing them is really hard. It's really hard to do for a coach. And you think that, you know, when a guy's on the bench, I remember Christian Lander being on the bench last year and people were just like, why isn't he playing? He's like, you don't think he wants to, Archie Miller wants to be playing Christian Lander right now? He just doesn't think he's ready. And whether he was ready or not, whether he was right or not, it had to be killing him to get a five-star point guard and not feel like he could use him. And that's the tough part on coaches. And again, I'm not saying Archie Miller was right in not playing Lander, but when coaches have guys, they want to use them. They have them for a reason. They put them on the roster for a reason. They keep them on the roster for a reason, and they want to be able to use them. So I think that that's the toughest part is figuring out who to play, who not to play. Because you want to play everybody. You wish you could play everybody, use every skill you've got at your disposal. But you know, sometimes when some guys are on the floor and other guys aren't, you're losing something. So how often can you keep them on the floor and justify it?
I think from my perspective, his honesty, I think he's just straightforward. He's here in Indiana to finish his career and to bring Indiana back to where it belongs, and he's going to have honest conversations. And sometimes when you care about people, you got to have tough conversations. And that might mean you're going to not play a lot this year, and we want you here. And at times that might lead to transfers out, but he's going to be honest. He was coached honest by Coach Knight, and he's had to be that way in the NBA. You know, there's a lot of egos in the NBA, and to build, you know, what he did at the playoff teams at Atlanta and New York, he had to mesh a lot of egos together. So if anyone has that experience, I think it's Archie. So Jeff asks, do you think Coach Woodson will play small at times? And I assume that's like a Cop at four and Hunter at four with the post player, much like the NBA, to create mismatches on the open floor. Ryan, do you think the lineup will have that kind of feature next year? And what's the pluses and minuses if they do?
Yeah, I do think they'll go small at times, but I think they'll go small at times when, you know, they're not going to take Trace out when there's a big man on the floor that they can't guard. You know, I mean, I think that they're going to be careful with it, but we saw times this year, you know, Race running as the five. We saw, you know, times where he was out and Trace was out and Hunter was playing in the post a little bit. I mean, they'll be able to mix and match, and Kopp played on the block a little bit too, offensively and defensively. So I think that, you know, Geronimo, we saw play some post defense this year. So they'll be able to do that. And I think he will do that, certainly, to get some more speed, maybe be more up-tempo. Maybe you put, you know, a guy like Lander out there with, you know, Bates and some small guys, and you just go run. And maybe you get shooters like Parker Stewart and Anthony Leal spotting up in the corners, and Kopp is your fifth, and you do some screening action to get him on a pin down and pop out against a big man who's not going to be able to get out there quickly. You can certainly do that, and I think I expect him to go small at times. I expect him to mix lineups to an incredible degree, because guess what? They do that in the NBA, and they also in the NBA, one thing they do is a lot of matchup stuff, and they put guys one-on-one. They isolate guys one-on-one who they want to be one-on-one, as opposed to just running your system and finding it through the system in college. They will set up entire lineups just to get mismatches and screen and roll and all those things to get mismatches. And I expect him to do a lot of that. And so whether it's going big, going small, whatever, I think I expect him to adjust to get the matchups he wants.
Andy?
Yeah, I think there's enough combinations to do that. You know, how small they really get is, you know, is playing Kopp at the four considered playing small? Probably, you know, maybe not. I don't know. There's, but I could see them rolling out lineups with that. You saw a little bit of Hunter at the four last year. So in that regard, I think you'll see it as matchups allow for it. And as you start to see guys settle in and really be able to shoot what combinations work well together, I think there's definitely a place for it if you can do that. They're also going to have to see how defenses start to, you know, play against them. And that's going to take a little bit of time as well. You know, defenses aren't going to have any film on what a Mike Woodson coach team is going to look like. So you're probably going to be able to, you know, experiment a little bit early on, figure out how teams are going to play you, how teams are going to play Trace more specifically, and then figure out how you adapt to what you can do to best complement him outside of, you know, what he brings inside.
The talent on this team is really good to go small. Race has got to get his minutes because he's our best competitor, a good rebounder, and a good defender. But, boy, the 1-2 punch at the five is just fantastic, but there's not enough minutes for Race only backing up Trace when he's out of the game. So you're going to have to play him at the four to get him his 20, 23 minutes, whatever Race is going to get. So that goes back to that stretch four. Whatever he decides to do with that stretch four, is it a smaller player? Is it a bigger player? That's going to be the most interesting thing for me. But I am looking forward to playing a lot smaller. I think it's a guards game. I think it's a perimeter game. I think it's a shooting game with a little bit of inside, and I'm glad we're moving to that. I'm going to ask Bill's question. I'll take this. If anyone wants to jump in on that, you can. It's about Coach Woodson. If you're Coach Woodson, what would you tell Assistant Coach Dane Fife concerning his already explicit overtures that he wants to be the head coach someday? Undoubtedly, that kind of talk risks creating tension between him and the other two assistant coaches and possibly even Woody himself. Put on your Coach Woodson hat. Tell me what you think he would say. First of all, if he hired Dane Fife, he's pretty sure that Dane Fife's going to be loyal to Coach Woodson, and I think that pretty much ends that question. And at any time, that any assistant at any level is more interested in themselves. The second thing you say is, if I'm Coach Woodson, is thanks, because you want guys to be hungry enough to do their work, to come in and watch film, to do a good scout, to be successful, and to be named as one of the best possible assistant coaches out there, because whether it's Indiana or another college job, you really want assistants to be hungry. I've been told that by high school coaches, while they would love staff continuity, if your staff is good enough to be asked to go be head coaches or coach elsewhere, then you really have a good staff. That happens in football. That happens everywhere else. You'd love to keep everyone together. So Dane Fife is an IU guy. He was brought here for the right reasons, and Dane is a straight shooter and will do a job. He's also been a head coach, so he knows what to bring a head coach. Any thoughts on that whole coach and waiting stuff? Do you think it affects the coaching staff at all?
Yeah, I think if you're Woodson, I mean, you clearly know Fife came out and said, you know, this was, he had, you know, put in for the head coaching job, wanted it, whatever. I don't think that's a bad thing. It's another guy who, like Woodson, has a lot of pride for the program and is able to do that. And again, I don't think you have him on staff if you have concerns that he's not going to be loyal to you or doing other things. And Fife doesn't certainly seem like that kind of guy anyway. So I think if you want to really spin it, you could say, hey, it's a great thing because he cares enough about the program that he wants to be in charge of it in the same way that he does and kind of shepherd it through this period of time. And potentially a guy that you could hand the keys to at some point and feel comfortable doing that and be able to impart on him the way that you feel like things need to run. And if it works, something else that he can take with him as he does it. So I don't really feel like there's controversy there in my view. I'd probably appreciate the candor, if nothing else, knowing that Fife had wanted it. That's out in the open and whatever else. But Fife has seemed to be nothing but completely bought into everything that's going on in any conversations that he's had since then. So to me, it doesn't feel like anything to worry about at this point if I'm in Woodson's shoes.
And Ryan, anything, or we want to move on to the last question?
He wouldn't have hired Fife. Yeah. He, I mean, he knows Fife wants to be the coach at Indiana eventually. Like, but Fife also knows taking that job, it's going to be a long time if things go well. And if things don't go well, Fife's going to get fired along with the rest of them. You know, I mean, so he, of course, knows the situation. Fife wants to be the coach at Indiana. Cool. When a Woodson retires, I mean, if all goes well, Woodson retires, maybe Fife takes over, you know? So it's obviously people talking about that being, you know, creating tension. They both know what they're in for here. Yeah. And if the best case scenario for Fife is that Woodson is wildly successful, he's here for 10 years and decides to step down and Fife takes over. That is the best case scenario for Dane Fife. Maybe 6 to 10 years. That's the best case scenario. So he's not going to try and undermine Woodson, because guess what? If Woodson fails, Fife's going to be gone too. So it doesn't make sense that he would undermine it.
And last question, and we'll get out of here tonight, everyone. Coach Woodson has started. This is from Josh. Coach Woodson is starting to resemble a more relaxed version of Coach Tom Allen, especially with that Knicks video. It took Allen a couple years to really get things rolling with the football team. Are we as a fan base internally creating expectations too high for Woodson's first season at the helm due to excitement surrounding the recent recruiting wins? We kind of discussed that in the floor ceiling thing. But are we jumping the gun a little bit too much with the excitement of all the good things that have happened?
Well, the difference is that Tom Allen didn't have the roster that Mike Woodson has. And you can't win without players. You know, you can be the greatest coach in the world. You don't have competitive players, you're not going to win. And so I think that's the difference, is it took Tom Allen a while to build up the roster, to recruit the guys he needed, and to get the coaches around him that he needed. Woodson has the coaches. He's got Thad Matta helping him out. He's got players. I mean, they have the things that you need to compete now, whereas Tom Allen was pretty much building from the bottom.
Well, I think the other thing is you just have a natural enthusiasm for the program that you didn't have in football. So a lot of what Allen had to do was also to not only get the talent in, as you said, Ryan, but to be able to manufacture in some ways the enthusiasm needed for the program. I think IU already has the enthusiasm right now based on, you know, all the interactions that we've had and the way the, you know, last month or so has gone. So I think you've got a little bit of that. I do think, and we could probably look back at every offseason, no matter who the coach was, that we've really can talk ourselves into the idealized version of so many different guys. So I don't know that that's unique to Woodson, I wouldn't say. But I do think there's a little bit of that, just because I think you can look at the pieces really well, but you don't know how they're going to fit together under, you know, even normal circumstances, let alone kind of learn a new system. And maybe the learning the new system is the thing that really equals that out. And it isn't, you know, Archie's guys versus anybody else, because everybody's in the same boat trying to learn things and figure out what they're going to do and how they're going to play. But that to me is the potential concern, where the sum is not greater, than the pieces. But I do think there are some differences there, but.
Yeah, I always I will say to be careful with how high you set your expectations. It's okay to want to compete for the Big Ten champion and be a top four seed, and those are our goals. So those expectations are good. But it often takes time for a new coaching staff to mesh together themselves, to get the players in. And like we said, every one of the players comes in, offers better talent, but they also have areas that they need to work on in the offseason, and very rarely do all 13 reach – like Andy said, their ideal version of play. I just think the excitement is good. We should jump on board and be glad that Coach Woodson's here and really enjoy it. And that's why I said I'm looking at a top seven, and hopefully it's closer to the top than to the seven. I want to see Indiana called on Selection Sunday and go on a show and talk about it. It's been since 2016 since we've had that ability here on the show to do that. And maybe that's just too low of expectations, but get me in the darn thing, and hopefully at a higher seed. So
that's it. We're done. No more questions.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Special thanks to Bob Thompson for producing a lot of the music that you hear on the show. And thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again next week or sooner if any news breaks. Until then, keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
All right, I got to get out of here, folks. Thank you.
You might get beat today, but each day you got to get better.
And that's the truth. Thanks, Coach Woodson. Thanks, Chat Mob. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Andy, for joining us. A really good show. Pretty efficient in our time. We had a lot of great questions there from the community. Really appreciate that. That helps with our segment three. Ryan, great to have you back. Glad everything went well with the surgery. How many fingers?
I can actually see, guys. Four.
Right? Four. No, all right. Two. Very good.
Two. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Padres had a no-hitter. We haven't talked about that.
They did.
And then got swept by the Brewers.
Yeah, that was rough. Our offense is struggling right now. But Joe Musgrove comes home. Great story. Padres had not had a no-hitter in the length of the franchise, which was 8,205 games. In 8,000, they were the only team in Major League Baseball never to have one. Game 8,206. Joe Musgrove, who's from San Diego, grew up here, just came back to his hometown team and grew up idolizing Jake Peavy as a Padre and all that stuff, threw a no-hitter, which was amazing. So that was a fun night.
Somewhat because of you, and more so because of the talent that has gone to San Diego. I am now watching San Diego baseball almost every night on the MLB package, and I love the uniforms.
Haven't had much to watch lately, Coach. No, they're struggling. Injured right now, and they've got some injuries, well, and you know, Tatis hasn't really hit his stride yet because he started the season, then got hurt, and then he's kind of back, but he's struggling. They don't have their catcher. You know, I mean, so there's just sort of some ups and downs right now. And,
it's so much better talking baseball with you than Andy and Jeff Marlowe about those Cincinnati Reds and the uniforms are even better, you know. So
gotta love that brown, baby. Gotta love that brown
pinstripe brown. Oh yeah, oh, that is beautiful.
I'm in no position to talk about the Reds. They did get swept in a 3-game series where their starting pitchers gave up a total of 2 earned runs.
I saw that. Oh man.
And they scored 20 runs. The bullpen is just an absolute tire fire.
Yeah.
We've more
Potters are that way early last year too.
Baseball Weekly. Right. Assembly Call into Baseball Weekly.
It's terrible. I mean,
This week in baseball. You're too young, aren't you?
Yeah.
To remember that?
No, I saw that when I was a kid.
All right. Very good.
Everybody, love you all.
All right.
Thanks, Chat Mob. Thanks, everybody. Great show.
We'll see you next week.
All right, we'll see you guys later.
All righty, we'll see you.
Mexico is more than a country. It's a feeling. Wherever you feel Mexican, there is Mexico. Let's celebrate it. Tecate. Mexico is in us.
Introducing Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, blending the smooth, creamy nitro taste of Guinness with hints of coffee, chocolate, and caramel. Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, your new favorite part of the day. Look for it where Guinness is sold. Must be 21 and over to purchase. Please enjoy responsibly. Diageo Beer Company, New York, New York.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.